Hey everyone, welcome back to another season of Data Driven Health Radio. I'm your host, Dave Korsunsky. On this show, we dive deep into how you can use data to measure, manage, and optimize your health with the latest science and technology. This show is brought to you by Heads Up, which is our web and mobile app designed for individuals and healthcare professionals who need a precise way to measure and manage health data. Check us out at headsuphealth.com. If you've got comments, questions, or feedback on this show, shoot us an email, support@headsuphealth.com. We'd love to hear from you. And with that said, let's get into our next exciting episode. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Data Driven Health Radio. My special guest today is Jillian Acosta, a new good friend of mine who I met recently in Miami Beach. Is that right, Jillian? Is it in Miami Beach? My last few weeks are a blur. Anyhow, Jillian is a functional dietitian, and she's the founder of the Root Cause Method. And I had the great privilege of watching Jillian give a talk at this conference. And we're going to get into the presentation that she did around obesity and weight management. And really, the key term I took from that whole event was this concept of integrative mental health. That really are the words that kind of like encapsulated everything that was happening here, at that event. So, Jillian, I really want to get into the conversation about what you presented at A4M. But before we do that, if you could just introduce yourself to the audience and just tell us about the amazing work you're doing in the world, and then we can branch off into other topics.
Sure. First of all, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here chatting with you. And yeah, I'm a functional dietitian. I went to school traditionally to become a registered dietitian, and then I pursued my more training as a functional practitioner because I understood that like the root cause of so many of the conditions that we see today are not being addressed by conventional medicine. And namely, you know, in the world of functional medicine, which I believe a lot of your listeners are attuned to, one of the main drivers of so many of the conditions that we have, that we see today in the health sphere, are exacerbated by weight. But what's driving weight? And one of the antecedents of so many chronic illnesses is childhood trauma. And so I named my practice the Root Cause Method because I believe that the root cause of so many conditions is actually childhood trauma. And if we're wanting to improve the physiology, optimize our health, our quality of life, et cetera, then we need to go to the root. And that's my personal philosophy, but it's how I've healed my body. And that's really governs the work that I do in the world with my clients. And I'm kind of placed in an interesting intersection between the worlds of like, you know, physiology and functional medicine and mental health. And I use psychedelics as the primary tool or one of the tools to really access the root cause. What's driving our behaviors around food? What's driving the things that are so commonplace that have our physiology in such a space of inflammation and a compromised status? So I hope that makes sense. That's kind of the gist of what I do.
Well, I think you're getting to perhaps one of the most important and oftentimes, as you mentioned, it's out of the scope of traditional weight loss therapies. It's out of the scope of traditional medicine. It does really start to get down to the root of where an individual is struggling. It's oftentimes a scary place for people to think about even going when they want to make changes in their health, but it's probably some of the most profound and rewarding work that can ever be done to help people towards reaching a state of optimal health. So just first of all, congratulations on the courage to just even say, this is where I want to go and this is where I want to help. And I want to help people go deep down into the closet and figure out what the heck is in there and clean it out. And it's just fucking awesome. So there's like a million questions I want to ask you here. A few things. First of all, like when you were speaking at the conference, I know you said that you're just getting into the world of speaking at events, but I reached out to you after your presentation by text, again, just not even really knowing you. And your stage presence was phenomenal, first of all. You're just a total natural up there. All the speakers were great, don't get me wrong. But like your slides were clean and minimalist, and you just were not even on the stage. You just like came down right in front of everybody and just like engaged and was just like, man, she's been doing this for 20 years. So
wow, what a call.
Definitely natural up there. Yeah, it was awesome.
Thank you.
I do a lot of that kind of work too. And that's why I noticed it was just really, really smooth and well done and concise and awesome. So fantastic stage presence.
Thank you so much.
And I even made some notes, Jillian. You mentioned something in your talk. I made two notes because I had been keeping notes on all the sessions. And one of the things you said was, first of all, nobody binges on broccoli. And I thought that was just like, that one is just a great tagline right there. Amen. And then you were talking about food triggers at one point, and I've worked in a lot of weight loss programs and clinics just due to the nature of the work we do here at Heads Up. And I've spoken with weight loss practitioners who have clients who like even just have to change the way they drive home from work so they don't drive past the place that triggers their emotional eating, for example. And one of the things you said was you were like, hey, the triggers are fine, but I want to know what triggers the trigger. And that's like next level of trying to figure out like, okay, yes, we know when you drive by McDonald's, you get emotionally triggered, right? That we know, that's fact. And people have triggers for lots of different things, but what triggers that? And why is that even triggering to one person and not the next person? It was just the next level of depth, I think, to start asking why about certain things.
Yeah.
So, those were a couple quotes I pulled out of the session from you. I know that's random, but any comments on those two?
So great. What I have to say that kind of encompasses both of them is that it's never about the food. It's never about the food. Emotional eating, anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa, overweight or obesity, it's never about the food. It's about what's driving the impulse to use food in a particular way. And my belief, and this is what's stated in the literature, is that it really boils down to attempted emotional regulation. We're trying to self-soothe. It's not yes. McDonald's. It's this woman who is so overwhelmed by her life and doesn't understand how to create spaciousness or to regulate her nervous system in a way that's deeply nurturing and soothing. So McDonald's has been the thing that she's reached for to try to give her momentary relief. And that's why when she drives past McDonald's on her way home from maybe a job she's miserable at, she feels so compelled to swing by the drive-thru. It's not McDonald's. Yes, you know, physiologically or neurologically, there are chemicals, dopamine is surging, endorphin, serotonin, all the cascade of feel-good hormones that we get flooded with when we're engaging with food or other substances in this manner. But what's underneath that is this need, this biological need to homeostasis. Nervous system regulation is a form of homeostasis. No creature in nature can survive in a perpetually sympathetic state. They'll die. We're the same. And so if in a society or in a culture that is so promotes such dysregulation with overworking and over everything-ing, right? We're dysregulated that the ways in which we attempt to soothe are typically costly. They can be detrimental. And what's exciting about this is that, yes, I'm a dietitian. I deeply support the physiology. I'm analyzing data. I'm creating protocols for people's unique physiology. But I spend a limited amount of time on that. And I spend so much time on what's driving our behavior, what's happening mm-hmm. in the body. I say this thing often to my clients that weight gain has so much, it's so little to do with food, and it has so much to do with how willing we are to feel. How yes. safe can we make ourselves? How spacious can we, like a spacious environment or a safe environment internally, so that we can feel what's there? Because when we're willing to feel an emotion, we no longer need food to numb it. And the charge mm-hmm. around McDonald's or cookies or whatever, it starts to dissipate because the feeling, the energy has already been felt. It's experiential. It's deeply healing on a foundational level. It's not about following a rigid diet or meal plan.
I love the words you used, attempted emotional regulation, which is, as an organism, doing the things in our environment that we think we need to do to get back to this state of homeostasis. And sometimes the way we self-regulate becomes maladaptive. And that can show up in any number of ways. It could show up through the food choices we're making, or the substances we're consuming, or the choices that we're making on a day-to-day basis. And that's a really, really hard problem to solve, because you have to really go down into the core of the software, and you have to go into like the operating system and figure out like, okay, there's a bug in there, you know, just to use some computer analogy, and it's psychospiritual, or also another word for that would be emotional. So there's not a lot of, traditionally, there's not a lot of tools available to us historically to work with psychospiritual issues. But when you can start to get to the root of those and create a container working with a therapist, and if you can create a container where those types of experiences can be brought up and felt in a safe way, even if you don't fully intellectually understand what's happening in that container, the fact that it's coming to the surface, then a lot of those unhealthy choices, they naturally start to fade away. And that's been my experience working with a lot of plant medicine, is even though I didn't have some epiphany on the journey, and some people do have epiphanies and it's an aha moment, and they come out of an experience and they've immediately keyed in on something that was blocking them. In my experience, it was more subtle, but whatever. The point is that behaviors just start changing organically and naturally. And what I was so encouraged about at A4M was that they're even creating the forum. So Jillian, could you maybe even just share for the audience what that whole track was even about? Like, to start seeing a whole track on psychedelic therapy at a very prestigious integrative medicine longevity conference. Like, this is an exciting paradigm for me. So could you even just like unpack what the heck even happened that weekend for people, and just how significant it is that this conversation is happening and these tools are coming into mainstream society?
Yeah, absolutely. So before I do that, I just want to mention something in, you know, to tag onto what you were saying before, that it's less about figuring out what the bug is in the software. Yes, awareness and mindfulness about an experience or a pattern is useful. It's almost like in some ways it can act as a prerequisite. I don't think it's the only one. But it's less about figuring it out and intellectualizing it, and it's more about experiencing it. It's more about creating safety to allow for the experience to come forth, allow the sadness. There's a big difference between processing and like thinking about sadness. I'm sad because this person said this mean thing to me, or feeling and being with sadness and letting sadness kind of move through you. And one of them moves energy and kind of closes the loop and leaves you with a sense of relief. And another one helps you understand why you may have gotten in that space, but it keeps the energy contained in, keeps sadness in, doesn't make it go anywhere. So conceptual versus experiential is a huge kind of foundational component of my work. And then A4M, as I alluded to in the beginning of our conversation, you know, one of the main antecedents of illness is trauma. Is childhood trauma. And what I spoke about in my talk is like, there's two major problems with trauma as far as I'm concerned. It's the event and what it does to the physiology. So a dysregulated nervous system, dysbiosis in the gut, hormonal imbalance, you know, adrenal fatigue, like there's so many. It's systemic, elevated cardiovascular function, all these different components physiologically of like the imprint, long-term imprint of trauma. But then the second primary concern is like, how we attempt to regulate it, how we are trying to come back into a space of homeostasis or regulation, nervous system regulation. And that is what you mentioned. It's the food, it's the substances, it's the toxic relationships, it's the numbing on social media, it's the overworking, it's the overspending, It's all of these mechanisms of how we are trying to seek relief. And those things, as maladaptive as they are, they have consequences. Obviously, if we're over-consuming food because we're so dysregulated and stressed out that we're boredom eating, or we're emotionally eating after stress eating, or whatever people are calling it these days, we're going to gain body fat. We're going to potentially find ourselves with multiple diagnoses. We're going to, you know, our quality of life, or now polypharmacy is in the picture. Like, there's all these ramifications that stem from trauma at its core. And so in mm-hmm. this integrative mental health, psychedelic realm, I also think that there's a big physical health component, because it's inextricable. The mental and the physical health is one and the same. If our mental health is in such a state where we're depressed or anxious all the time, and the nugget of that or the root of that is childhood trauma, then how are we engaging with things like food? How are we eating? How are we numbing? That impacts our physiology and our physical health. And so psychedelic, as the center point of these conversations, are such incredible tools to help us access what's driving such a state of mental catastrophe and really the opposite of health, what's behind that, and then also extending that into physical health. Why do these tools help heal the body? Because they're helping us get to the root of what's triggering or exacerbating the mental health conditions that are creating imbalance and dis-ease in the body.
Well, you know, Dr. Brad Jacobs was another one of the speakers there, and he works with clients on a range of longevity and health optimization. And I remember talking to him one time, and he said, I could be working with someone for years, and it will just take one session of psychedelic therapy, and every internal blocker or resistance they had to listen to what I was telling them to do came down. So he's like, sometimes just from one session, I can get somebody unstuck and they're finally ready to accept and make the changes that I've asked them to make, which is incredibly profound. And that's why when I saw this content and this education starting to come out, I'm not a mental health practitioner. I'm not a functional doctor. I make software. But the clinicians and the people who use my software, I understand what they're trying to get to. And that's why I was so excited to see this track. So what are your thoughts on, is this the first time they've had this at E4M? Do you know? I think it was. I can't be certain, though.
It was.
And what do you think about this, like starting to become part of the narrative?
I think it's incredible. I'm such a proponent. I mean, as a clinician in the health space, I, as I've said, don't see a difference between mental or physical health. I think they perpetuate one another. There's the, you know, 95% of serotonin is produced in the gut. If your gut is messed up or unhappy, your mind will be unhappy, just as stress can induce pathogenic or opportunistic bacteria in the gut. And so there's this bi-directional highway between the brain and the gut. And so it's like, you can't separate mental and physical health. It's not real. We don't live in silos or in compartments. That's not true. And so if we're really committed, as I've said it, I said it in the talk multiple times, to making a difference in health optimization, in helping people get off or reverse or go into remission for chronic illness or get off of medication, improve their quality of life, then we have to both focus on the physical and the mental health. And these tools are by far, in my experience and what's coming out in the literature, the most efficacious. They just take us right to the nugget, right to the root.
Yes, they do.
I got into this work because this was my experience. I lived for over three decades with a severe, I wouldn't call it an eating disorder. It got into eating disorder, diagnosable eating disorder in multiple segments of my 30 years of life, but overarchingly, it was disordered eating. I was binging. I was emotional eating. There were periods where I was in treatment for bulimia and binge eating disorder, but there were other moments where I may not have been diagnosed by a clinician, but it was disordered eating all throughout my life. And I had no idea why. I had no idea why, because that pattern began when I was 3 years old until I sat with ayahuasca in 2014. I didn't remember. I had no reference point of life prior to the development of that pattern. In sitting in an ayahuasca experience, I learned that I was sexually abused as a three-year-old child. And everything made sense to me. No wonder I abused food. No wonder I couldn't tolerate feeling anything uncomfortable. No wonder I isolated myself for the vast majority of my life. It all made sense. But not only was it logical and made sense to my rational mind, I experienced a level of compassion for myself that I had never been able to access. I was like, I saw myself for the first time with a new set of eyes. Like, my heart broke for myself. And from that space, I began devotedly working towards my own liberation of these patterns. My body started healing. I was diagnosed with thyroid and GI issues, like at a young age. Like, I lost weight. I was so inflamed. Oh my God. It was just like, I was a mess in many ways. I was so inflamed and miserable. And learning my story helped me on every level to understand why I had got to that way, to understand the patterns that have existed, to understand why the relationship with myself was in such shambles. And it allowed me to begin healing on the deepest layer imaginable. And I don't live there anymore at all.
Wow, that's incredible. You know, you really kind of got to the crux of the issue with early childhood events, which are, for most of us, we were so little, we don't even remember why it happened. So you were saying it, you're like, I knew I was behaving this way in the default world in normal life, but I didn't know why. And that's the case for most people, is they just don't remember what happened to them at that young age. I know there's an assessment that you can do called the ACE score, which is the Adverse Childhood Events. And we offer that in our system as a way maybe to create an awareness for people who may not be fully aware. We can't send everyone into ceremony. So we've got to figure out, like, hey, is there something that happened to you that you don't remember that is the actual root cause of what's driving
how do you
this? And how do you find what's that?
How do you answer that if you don't remember? Like, I had filled out an ACE survey before that ayahuasca experience, and like, reporting sexual abuse was not in my awareness. So I didn't. It was actually inaccurate. You know, like, there's...
Well, that's the beauty of the medicine. Like, the medicine helped you remember something that you couldn't even intellectually remember, even on the survey. So this is the core of the interview today. These are the tools, the stuff you don't even remember, the stuff you've decided to stuff away and not deal with. And in one session, you were able to access a painful memory. And I've been in dozens of ceremonies. And in the morning, when everyone shares their experiences, everyone, this is the power of these modalities, is I'll be in a room with 30 people in ceremony, and each person got uniquely what they needed to get on that particular night. And in your case, it helped you access a memory from 3 years old that you don't remember. And then you're able to feel and to have the tools to be able to process that in a way that is releasing. I've had experiences with plant medicine where I've just cried. And I don't even honestly know why, but it was like some beautiful, it was actually an energetic release. You know, some people release energy in different ways. You know, for me, it came out through tears, but you get to access these things. And then how does that change the trajectory of the rest of your life when you can start to get access to that? Let's get back on track here, Jillian, because we just really kind of touched on the most important part of what I wanted to talk to you about, which is finally having the tools to get access to those things that we don't remember and that are holding us back in ways that we don't fully even intellectually connect to. And when we can deal with that, how does that change the trajectory not only of our life, but how does it change the trajectory of everyone around us who we love and who we work with? We just show up as a completely different person. So the tools we have available to us today, legally FDA approved, are ketamine. We know that very soon there will be an FDA, I don't know what they call it, a ruling or something like that, on the phase 3 clinical trials from MDMA. And we know that psilocybin is not far behind there. And there are other tools out there that people use. But Could you share a little bit about how you work with ketamine as a psychospiritual medicine?
Yeah, absolutely. I would add to the list, there's also cannabis. And even though cannabis doesn't have the same psychoactive properties, it's still a plant medicine. I have a really beautiful relationship with cannabis such that it induces an altered state of consciousness, and I use it therapeutically. I will sit in front of my altar and just go on a little bit of a journey. And it really was a powerful tool for me as an introduction to psychedelics, because this was years ago, but I wasn't ready for like a full-on ceremony. But every time I would work with cannabis or smoke cannabis, it would take me into like a deep introspective place where I was able to process. And I was able to, that's the thing. It's like, I promise I'll segue this into your question, but like, I believe that so many of our behavioral patterns and addictions and tendencies and things that we abuse, right? Food being one of them. It's not about any of the substances. It's about our difficulty feeling. As I said in the presentation, like I don't believe the epidemic is obesity or even narcotic addiction. I think the epidemic is a fear of feeling. The epidemic is numbness and dissociation. And so what these tools and these teachers allow for us to experience is safety to feel. Because when we feel, we don't need the painkiller. We don't need the antidepressant. We don't need, you know, in most cases, right, there are outliers, but in most cases, we don't need the food. And so my work is interesting because I'm a functional RD. And so in my credentialing, I'm allowed to support people in behavioral change as it pertains to health. And so it's a gray area, but that's really where I'm living. But at the root of it, what I'm really facilitating or helping to facilitate is people reconnecting deeply with themselves, people becoming safe for themselves so that they can feel. Because when we are willing to feel, we don't need to numb. And so I have a program, it's called The Garden. It's a 13-week program, and participants or clients are sitting with ketamine 3 times over the course of the 13 weeks. And it's similar. I'm in collaboration with an at-home ketamine company. And so I refer the client to them. They go through their intake process, all of that. So I'm not really involved in the transaction with medicine.
You're not prescribing the part of it, but you're facilitating that happens through a relationship with a place that's set up to properly administer.
Yeah, I am holding space, as they say, right? I'm helping to facilitate the experience, the ritual. And so, because, you know, 95% of our behavior is driven by the subconscious mind, and that's where trauma lives. And so if we're really in the business of creating foundational, fundamental changes in people's experiences and patterns, then I believe that the subconscious realm is where we need to explore. That's where these belief patterns originated or are stored. It's where all these automatic tendencies are driven or governed by. And so there's a module within my program called Uprooting the Weeds. And we're in that module from weeks 4 to week 10. And that's exactly what we're doing. We're in the dirt. We're digging up the roots of the ways in which they see themselves, treat themselves, respond to certain stimuli. Like, everything is a direct reflection of the relationship we have with the self. If it wasn't safe to feel when we were children, if we got punished for being angry or sent to our room, we were led to believe that the feelings that we have are bad or they're not welcome. And so we have repressed those feelings. We have suppressed our own truth in many ways. Sadness is a truth. Anger is a truth. And so it's really about creating safety to allow these modes of expression, this energy to come forth and be known so that they can feel. Because I also see food as kind of like a wedge. It's a wedge that kind of like stands between a person and their truth, a person and their story, a person of whatever they're suppressing. It's kind of like this mechanism that pushes things down. And as that pattern starts to be alleviated, as they stop using food to push down feelings, what's happening simultaneously is that they're coming into deeper connection with themselves. They're able to open up to a feeling such as sadness or grief, hold themselves through the process of really feeling it, and no longer using anything to numb, meaning they're not fragmented from themselves. They're no longer dissociating. And in the absence of a dissociative mechanism, they're coming into connection. They're knowing deeper depths of themselves. They are coming into more compassion, coming into a deeper sense of integration, of wholeness. I'm not the guru or the healer. I am like a guide. I'm a Sherpa leading them back to themselves. And I use psychedelics. Whoa. I leverage properties of psychedelics and the neuroplasticity to help soften those deeply ingrained behavioral patterns or thought processes, perspectives of themselves, kind of stimulus response in terms of a trigger or an activation, and then boom, they're eating already. Like that gets to be softened because of the properties of ketamine, for example, the neuroplasticity, the neurogenesis. And simultaneously, this fertile foundational space is created for new perspectives, new thought processes, new behavioral patterns to start to anchor. And then we are deeply and intimately integrating from each of these experiences. It's like high touch point program. It's very intimate.
What I love about your approach, Jillian, and why I was so excited to talk to you is because you're the first person I've seen who has taken the concept of mental health and psychedelic therapy as a successful tool to approach obesity and eating disorders. I think it's very well known if you're working with ketamine or psychedelic therapy that it's approved FDA for treatment-resistant depression and suicidal tendencies and other heavy, heavy mental health disorders. But actually, when you start to think about it for in a weight loss or an eating disorder, it's absolutely just as relevant. And I think you could almost start to look at obesity and eating disorders from a mental health point of view. And no one is thinking that way except you. There's GLP-1s and there's keto diets and there's everything known to man, right? And yes, you have to get that stuff figured out, and blood sugar and metabolic health is a component of that, right? But like that's at a surface level, like, what changes can I make? And yes, those all work. I had phenomenal experience with a ketogenic diet personally. It was the first time I learned how to put myself into ketosis and learn how that machinery that I have works. So like that's all super, super important, but nobody was really coming at it from the mental health point of view. And that's why I was so excited to talk to you. And then you're taking it one step further and saying, now I want to take these incredible new therapies coming to market, like psychedelic therapy, and apply those to weight loss. And it was just the first time I'd seen those dots connected, and then to put them into protocols and to facilitate it. So it's just a really brilliant approach to the whole journey. And then the other great thing about integrative medicine is once they help you get to that root event, okay, that's great. Like you've addressed that. But then integrative medicine, functional medicine, then they can help you make the rest of the changes that you need to make. They can help you work on the health issues. They can help you work on how to eat properly. What does that even mean? How to get good sleep, you know, how to get the thyroid function dialed in, how to work on whatever else you have. But like once you rip the root out, that's the beautiful part of the word integrative mental health, is it's the whole package. So like we get to those adverse events and remove them, but then we build this whole integrative medicine foundation around it. And that's really, to me, like whole person healing and whole person holistic health and thinking, because you then work on the rest of the parts of the system that you can optimize once you get to the root. Anyhow, just a long-winded way of saying I love the way you're thinking about approaching this with these tools.
Thank you so much. And just to shine some light on this, eating disorders, classic eating disorders, that's actually diagnosed by the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, the DSM-5. So if we have eating disorders, bulimia, anorexia nervosa, binge eating disorder, they're classified as a mental disorder, really. But what I'm Understood. Fascinated by is that disordered eating is not diagnosable, but the criteria is the same. The criteria is eating past the point of fullness, eating when you're not physically hungry, eating and inducing a shame spiral, you know, eating until you're uncomfortably full. All of these criteria for binge eating disorder is exactly what people that are carrying excess weight, that are, you know, overweight or clinically obese, that's what they're doing. And so I say this Precisely. not to I want everybody to be diagnosed with an eating disorder, but rather because I'm trying to draw the connection between obesity and disordered eating,
yes.
Obesity and emotional eating. It's emotional eating. And so let's address the emotional component that's driving the status of obesity.
I've been in the business a while. I just haven't really seen it thought about that way. And like you said, there are clinical definitions of eating disorder, but there's lots of people who are not thinking of themselves as someone with a mental health disorder, but there is a disordered eating there. And can you help that person on their path by helping them work on some of the underlying structures that they may not even realize need to be addressed? That's like the most exciting part of this market, is people who are struggling, but they don't identify with a diagnosed condition, but there's emotional work that can be done to unlock these individuals to where they want to get to. So it's, for me, the really exciting segment is people who just don't think of themselves as having an emotional component that they need to deal with, but it is there. And if we can start destigmatizing the ability to even say, okay, yeah, maybe I do have some emotional triggers and drivers that I'm not aware of that are making it harder for me to achieve my goals. And now we have a whole new set of tools available to us. And these tools are expanding. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but both psilocybin and MDMA got breakthrough status from the FDA. Yeah. And at the A4M conference, a lot of the speakers there, they were licensed psychotherapists. They were licensed medical doctors. They are practicing medical doctors, practicing therapists, practicing psychologists. So these are credentialed doctors with decades of experience getting on stage and saying, in 3 sessions, I can completely address this issue. And my alternative before the psychedelic therapy was an antidepressant or a medication that someone's on for the rest of their life. So the difference between 3 sessions and the rest of your life on a medication, like those, and plus even the results from the clinical trials, just like they were orders of magnitude more successful than anything else we have a name for. And you only have to do it 3 times. And so these medical professionals are saying, hey, if I don't have to put someone on something that kind of tinkers with their brain chemistry for 10, 20, 30, or whatever period of time that you're on there, maybe it's a short time. And I have people I love who have had very positive experiences with pharmaceutical intervention, including antidepressants. So I don't want to like just beat up on that approach. But yeah, what's so exciting to me is that these new... Yeah, precisely. But what's exciting for me is, A, the outcomes that are available, they're off the charts. They're delivered in a very short amount of time. And C, it's the transformation that happens when you really just start to get to the root cause of a lot of issues. And for me, I'll speak personally, I didn't even necessarily think I had a lot of root cause issues emotionally to deal with. But I think just everybody growing up in society, you accumulate them. Like there are a lot of my friends who I love who have been sexually abused and or have had other very serious alcoholic parent or physical abuse. But even just going through normal day-to-day life, the amount of crap that we build up, the gunk in our system, for me, that's why I choose to use these medicines, is I just want to continuously be removing all the crap that I internalize from just society in general, and just dropping baggage like on a regular basis is like how I approach this stuff. That's just my own personal way of using these medicines.
Yeah, I think trauma is part of the human experience. And, you know, Dr. Gabor Mate says there's big T trauma, which is like sexual abuse, the death of a parent, like some big kind of catastrophic event. But then there's also little T trauma, which is maybe being humiliated in class by your second grade teacher, or your needs yeah. perpetually not being met. Your mother was loving, but working 2 jobs and just couldn't give you the nurturance that you crave. And that leaves an imprint, that leaves a hunger, right? And so no one gets through childhood unscathed by trauma. No one gets through childhood without these kind of beliefs about themselves in response to trauma. And that's really fascinating to me. And what I believe is that the crux of what shapes our relationship with ourself, but something that I say all the time is that every single thing in our lives is a direct reflection of the relationship we have with ourselves, how we feed ourselves, how we talk to ourselves, how we care for ourselves, our financial status, maybe our relationships, our romantic partnerships. Everything's a direct reflection of the relationship we have with ourselves. And so at the nugget, at the core of our health status, just for example, is that foundational relationship. And psychedelics bring us right there. They help us love ourselves, as kind of bumper sticker as they may sound. It flooded me with compassion. It allowed me to like enter into this gentle space with myself, which like blossomed into this beautiful relationship I have with myself, full of honor and appreciation and like admiration in some moments for strength, like the strength I've had to have throughout my life. Like it totally foundationally changed the lens or filter in which I see myself and treat myself, which has changed everything in my life without fail.
Like that's about as succinct as you can put it, Jillian. You know, I remember when I was traveling in Peru and I was sitting with different medicines, it was very natural in that culture to just every so often, just part of the normal society was to use these tools. Again, just on a continual basis, as you so beautifully put it. Yeah, first of all, just to look inward. I was in a Maloca, and there were just local people from the village who would just come in and go in there and do their work and then go back out into the world. It was a very normal part of society. And it's just to continue to build that beautiful relationship with ourselves. There's two other topics I wanted to chat with you about, Jillian. The first is how it pertains to the use of data and weight loss. And there's scale weight, like you can step on the scale, and that alone is like hard for a lot of people to deal with who have experienced weight issues. As I mentioned to you earlier, a lot of the practitioners who we work with, they'll ask their client to just like put duct tape over the scale, and they don't really want the people looking at it. And even when we work with weight loss programs where they offer to send a scale to the person at home, it's like they don't even want it. They've worked on this for so long where there's even a trauma towards the numbers. And even as awesome as biofeedback can be, that's our whole company, there's a place where that's not appropriate. So could you maybe just talk a little bit about when data is helpful and when data is harmful in the context of working on weight-related issues?
Yeah, I believe that nothing in the medical space should be a one-size-fits-all. I think my approach is very individualized. And so for some clients, it may be supportive for them to track weight. And others, it can be really triggering because there's so much deeper meaning or associations they've kind of entangled or is enmeshed with a number. I'm 5'10", you know, like if I'm the number compared to another woman who's 5'3", it could imply things, or it could kind of trigger certain thought processes or beliefs about myself that are frankly like counterproductive. I don't weigh myself, not because I'm afraid of the number. It doesn't offer me much, you know, it doesn't say anything, of course, about my lean body mass or my body composition really. And so I may ask for a weight initially when I'm working with a client, but I don't ask for their weight. I don't ask them to track their weight throughout the course of our work together. But I do look at other metrics. There are other metrics that are, some of them are qualitative and others are quantitative, but all of them are really useful. For example, I just had a client who finished the garden and she lost 40 pounds over our time together, which is astounding. And it didn't come from following a particular diet or a meal plan. Although I do prescribe a structure, the way I use that structure is like, this is what's most supportive for your physiology and do your best to follow it. But when you deviate, we are going to use that as gold. It's going to illuminate what was really going on. What did you really need? What were the patterns? Like all of that stuff is data that I'm collecting and using it for that particular client's nuanced experience. So I'm all for collecting data, but then there are other metrics, like I said, like glucose, fasting insulin, triglycerides. Like I really love data collection And so many people get so hung up on weight, but that's not, it tells a fraction of the story. It's incomplete. And then the other side is like, not everybody who goes through my program loses all this weight. Some people do, some people don't. Some people who've had this deep emotional relationship with food for so long that it takes, there's many layers to it. And while they can start to make shifts foundationally on the way they see themselves, it doesn't necessarily manifest as weight loss or exponential weight loss in a short period of time. And I don't believe their cases are any less effective or potent. There's been massive shifts. So how do you measure that? It's like the quality of the relationship that is being developed within the person, within the individual. And then we can kind of quantify that or qualify that in many ways. And then of course, the physical, physiological status, like how are their inflammatory status, is that being decreased? Their, all these other metrics and biomarkers, like we can track, but it's so one size, it's so nuanced rather. It's so not cookie cutter, one size fits all. In my
perspective. Yeah, you know, one of the most important indicators is, have you really lit the spark for that individual? Have you really helped them come in contact with what they needed to come in contact? That's the biggest win in all of this. The rest of the numbers will improve over time, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, like you said, depending on each individual. So we work with all kinds of different data points, and there's some people who find them extremely motivating and helpful. As you said, it's all situationally dependent, but in the context of weight, it just seems especially sensitive. And I think that's when the talented practitioner will decide, when is data going to be motivating and when is it not? So I think it's just a conversation to have. It's an always important topic just to figure out when these types of numbers can be helpful or harmful. So this is Data Driven Health Radio, the show, after all. So like, we talk about measuring lots of things. But I also just want to acknowledge that there's a time and a place where that's not the right thing for that person at that
moment. I'm still measuring. When a person goes through my process in the beginning of the program, we create a morning practice, like a morning ritual. And so one of the things I'm measuring over the course of the program is how many times a week are they sitting and doing their morning ritual? That's data for me, because I know the more they're sitting.
I love that one. Yes.
You know, the deeper, the more they're prioritizing themselves, making space to connect with themselves, deepening their connection with themselves. And that still tells me something that's measurable and trackable, but that's not necessarily like a biomarker or a number.
Oh man, I couldn't agree more. You know, there's times where I'm not traveling like a madman and I'm home and I'm stable and my nightly ritual is consistent and my morning ritual is consistent. And those are just the sweetest times in life where that is happening. So like, even just like, are you checking in with yourself on a daily basis? Whatever checking in with yourself means, maybe it's just journaling, or maybe it's whatever your morning ritual is, a cup of coffee outside, listening to the birds, or a meditation session. So I really like that way of thinking about just measuring how we're checking in with ourselves. That can be the most important indicator of success. Are we prioritizing the relationship with ourselves and with our mental health? Even just that as a simple yes or no type of thing. Like, am I doing that consistently and daily is a really powerful indicator.
Absolutely. I mean, this client who lost this weight, who I'm referring to, she'll tell you like it wasn't because of a diet. It was because she learned how to be like the nurturing caretaker for herself that she never had, but always needed. And in that space of like lovingly being with herself through something challenging, that prevented her, that kind of dissipated this need to use food to soothe it. And that's where the weight loss came from. It was a byproduct of self-care. So we can measure what does self-care look like for you? And how often are you engaging in these practices that are allowing this relationship with the self to shift, such that you're no longer needing things to numb whatever you're experiencing internally?
Yeah, that's pretty beautiful. Wow. Okay. So, you know, the last part, Jillian, is there's a lot of people who would like to have access to the types of things we're talking about here. And this is all very new for a lot of people. And there's ways to engage in psychedelic therapy that are through licensed practitioners that have a lot of experience working with it. A lot of them spoke at A4M. And if you're listening to this and this is a path you want to go down, you can access the A4M information. And there were amazing, talented people like Jillian who do this professionally, and they do it safely, and they do it according to what is regulated and approved and done properly. So how do people get in touch with you, Jillian, if they're looking to work with you? And even if you're just listening to this and we've sparked a curiosity and you even want to have a conversation with someone to say, hey, is this right for me? What's the best way to get access to a really, really good integrative mental health professional?
It's a good question. First of all, ways to access me. My website is therootcausemethod.com. My Instagram is JillianAcosta_RD. And I run all of that myself. It's always me who you'll hear from. And I'm happy to be a resource and point you in a direction depending on your needs. But I would agree, it took me a long time to penetrate the world of psychedelics. This was back in the day, like in 2018, 2019, before there was so much conversation in the zeitgeist and in the collective. Now there are multiple states like California, Colorado, people are able to speak about it openly because it's been decriminalized. And so there are retreats that are being run and group kind of programs and modalities that are available for people. And ketamine clinics, I think, are a great place to start. I'm a fan of ketamine, strictly in a therapeutic context, because it's no less potent. I mean, it's potent. It's different from ayahuasca, of course, but it's still potent. It still induces an altered state of consciousness. It still allows for exploration of the psyche and the subconscious mind. And it allows and catalyzes big emotional releases and energetic releases. But the thing that I really love about ketamine is that it's gentle. It's so gentle. It's very heart opening. You're still getting a potent experience. But in my perspective, because of the level of trauma that I experienced as such a young child, sometimes when I'm getting ready to sit in medicine, I will feel this contraction of my nervous system. It feels so scary sometimes. And one of the reasons I use ketamine so much personally and professionally, A, it's legal, but personally, is because I don't have to kind of break through the layer of fear in order to be available for what the medicine wants to show me. It just I'm open to it. And so for people that are starting this path of exploration, ketamine is an amazing place to start. And there are ketamine clinics almost everywhere. It's accessible. And so my recommendation would be to either explore a ketamine clinic or explore one of these at-home ketamine companies such as Joyous or Journey Clinical or Mindbloom, New Life. Like, they have an intake process and they'll send the medicine to your home and you can have a guided experience with a psychotherapist on a Zoom call or a similar, like a video call, and in the comfort of your own home. That's what I'm doing with my clients, that kind of structure. And so if you feel safe and there's someone that is trusted to kind of help you process both before, during, and after the experience, yes, the rest is up to like the higher intelligence. The rest is like, I trust the medicine. I trust spirit. And you'll be shown only what you're capable of holding and nothing more. And everything you're afraid of seeing, you've already survived. You've already survived the worst of it. It's just the energetic and emotional residue that wants to be kind of felt so that the loop can be kind of complete. It just wants your attention and your experience. And then it can kind of like leave the party. You've already survived it. And so what a gift to yourself, your mental health, your physical health, your emotional health, your energetic body, like all the things gets deeply benefited from you kind of touching these things that psychedelics help to access. And that's probably where I would start.
As out of part of my own curiosity, I've gone to ketamine clinics, and that's one way of administering it. What was missing for me there was really no therapeutic component to it at all. It was more of like, okay, this is just an acute experience for you. So there are clinics who mainly cater to very acute situations, and those clinics cater to a lot of people who are coming in with very, very severe acute mental health disorders. And they're set up to give someone that acute experience, but there's very little in terms of integration. It's not a relationship with a therapist per se. So those are there. That's one form. There's the companies. Agreed. And there's a place for those. And I've experienced those. And I think the next part of it would be, can I work with a therapist who can have a relationship with me and use this as one part of the therapeutic experience? That's a different type of way to use these types of medicines. And then there's others, there's hybrid models, like you explained, where you can be in the comfort of your own home and work with someone who can help you there. So I'm just laying out for people who are listening and don't know where to start, just different ways, different entry points, basically, of how you can start to gain access here. So anything you'd add to those entry points, Jillian?
Yeah, I would prioritize a therapeutic alliance. I would seek out either a company or a facility that offers, you know, a therapeutic option, or having your own therapist acting as a support system for the integration process. Like, I remember my first ayahuasca experience, the medicine man saying 98% of change and transformation happens off the mat. 2% happens on the mat. 2%, because it's like this massive expansion of our awareness. But then, like, what do you do with it? It's all about weaving in and integrating and like creating a new psychological infrastructure, essentially. And that integration is what does that. It's like, I always see it as this, and I have no, you know, experience in like the world of architecture whatsoever, but I see that psychedelics, it shows us like the blueprint, like almost like the renderings. And then it's like integration is what is like brick by brick, creating something that is like livable, breathable thing, a way we live our lives.
Agreed.
So having a strong alliance, having that therapist or that strong therapeutic alliance is what helps you build that infrastructure, not letting you go back. Because if you do a psychedelic experience and you have a psychedelic experience and then you go back into old patterns, let's say you emotionally eat again, you're going to reinforce whatever you're practicing. Neuroplasticity doesn't just work for deepening the neural pathways of the positive. It's deepening the neural pathways of whatever is being practiced. And so having a strong therapeutic alliance to help you shift a new pattern and deepen that allows that new process to anchor, as opposed to reinforcement of the old.
That's, you know, one of the things I'm most excited about as more of these tools become FDA approved is the ability to go to a retreat center or go to a therapist's office, an integrative mental health professional who has created the conditions already for a peaceful, serene, safe environment. Immediately, even when you walk in the door, you feel yourself start to be at ease because there's plants and beautiful music. And so these opportunities now are becoming available where you can go to places that have professionally trained people, licensed people, and you can go there and the whole experience is engineered for you. And you can go in there and have an experience in a safe, supported environment and be there eating healthy food for a weekend and be there with people who can help you integrate the experience. And in one weekend, it can be completely life-changing. So find a place that is safe and supportive and meets your needs. Find someone amazing like Jillian. Find someone who can integrate this with you as part of whatever type of therapist experience you have. You know, at A4M, there were tons of therapists with decades of experience that are now introducing psychedelics as part of their treatment program. They're still awesome. They just have some awesome new tools to layer in. I can't tell you how wonderful it would be just to go to a weekend retreat where I can go and do this in a safe, supported, legal way. These are FDA approved. They're clinically manufactured products. We're not talking about stuff that is outside of traditional medicine. So you're getting pharmaceutical grade product. You're getting a place to do this in a safe, supported way. And like, that's the most promising and exciting thing for me in psychedelic therapy is making it accessible to more people, making it safe, creating the container to go in there and be able to do this important work, not just once or twice, but I believe on maybe an ongoing basis, maybe annually, just being able to go in and like we've already talked about, drop the baggage as we collect it over the course of our life. That's what I think the most exciting part about this whole movement is just safe, supported ways to get access to this. And once you remove the root, then life opens up in a completely new and beautiful way. So I'm just excited to see where this all goes. And congrats to you, Jillian, for doing this amazing work in the world. Thank you. Tell us one more time, for people who want to work with you, the best way to get in touch with you as we close here.
Sure. Real quick, those exist. There are group ketamine retreats that are already in existence. I know Dr. Michelle Wiener is an incredible pain management physician. She was a speaker at A4M alongside of me. She leads group ketamine experiences in South Florida. And I know she's not the only one there. They're being held and they're beautiful. I've participated in them before. They are beautiful. There's something so powerful.
Is there anyone else we should list, Jillian, in the show notes? You mentioned Michelle Wiener. Anyone else you'd want to list as a resource in the show notes?
Let me think about that and then I can message you. No one's coming to mind.
Yeah, just ping me.
The above ground is coming to mind right now.
Okay, got you.
Yeah, there's like the treat centers that I'm really a fan of that are doing deep, beautiful, super integrous work in Costa Rica that I'm happy to share those resources. I trust. And yeah, I know there's some really good organizations that are doing great work in the world. So more and more people will have access to this. Yeah. And then the rootcausemethod.com is my website. There's a couple of offerings. I'm actually getting ready to launch a group program for women in May 15th. It's called Wildflower. It's an 8-week program, live calls, 2-hour calls every Wednesday. And it's going to be so potent. It's for women who are on this path of emotional eating. And the tagline is find beauty in the weeds. And it's all about learning how to use this relationship with food as our ally, because it actually is there to illuminate what our needs really are and then how we can meet those needs ourselves. So it's going to be juicy and potent.
Find beauty in the weeds. I love everything about that. That's awesome. It's a good one.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. And then The Garden is my other program. It's the 13-week one-on-one deep dive. It's with medicine. And that is not a cohort. So that's like whenever, it's one-on-one. And both of those, there's tons of information about that on my website. And then of course, social media, Instagram, you can find me at @JillianAcosta_RD. And that's me.
You're an angel, Jillian. Thank you for everything you're doing. It was really great meeting you at that event. And I'm just excited to continue working with you personally and professionally, just as a colleague and as a friend. So thank you for making time to share your expertise. It's incredible work you're doing in the world. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I'm so grateful to have met you also and excited to continue weaving.
Thanks, Jillian.
Thank you for listening to Data Driven Health Radio.